Welcome to episode 16 of All of Your Business. These are the vulnerable, authentic, and unfiltered stories of business owners whose currents raise tides that lift all of our businesses, communities, and dreams. Before we get started, we are proud to announce that All of Your Business podcast has received a 2020 X-Ray Podcast Award presented by X-Ray FM. X-Ray FM, purpose-driven media at 91.1 FM and 107.1 FM, and find them online at xray.fm. On this episode, we've got Prairie Clark, owner of I've Been Framed Discount Art Supplies. And now, executive producer and host, Michael Jonas.
Prairie, how are you?
Good, how are you?
I'm doing well. It's good to see you.
You too.
I have to ask you, how did you get a name like Prairie?
I have hippie parents. I almost got named a few things. Turtle, Rose, or Storm, or Truth, but my mom didn't know if she could pin that on a kid. She was from the Midwest, and she said a prayer into the wind over the prairie that I would be a girl. So my name is Prairie Wind.
That is beautiful and very Northwest.
Yes.
And what about, do you have any siblings?
Yes, I have four brothers.
And do they have, you know, names like Tim, or do they have names like Rainbow and Rain?
My older brothers have somewhat normal names because they have a different mother, Walter and Chad. And then my little brothers are River and Ocean.
There you go.
They're twins.
That's cool.
That's their middle name, but they decided to go by that in high school.
Very cool.
Yeah.
So tell me about life growing up.
Oh, gosh, we're going to start
there. We're going to start there. Yeah, I know.
I have four brothers, so that's already a lot of fun, being the only girl smack dab in the middle of four brothers. We grew up kind of crazy, all over the place. I moved a lot. My mom counted it up one time, and we moved 33 times before I was 11.
Wow.
There is a lot of times we grew up really poor. Mm-hmm. My parents were hard workers. We lived off the land, often out of town. Yeah, I mean, I remember working even as a kid. We had a lot of different adventures. I've lived all kinds of places. So some of that is really fun, but some of it was not fun. You know,
yeah.
I think as a kid, I would just start to make friends when we would move again. So that was really hard. And for the most part, you know, there's a lot of things looking back now that I learned from that, or that I took from that, you know, that were positive, not just negative. Like, don't make any friends next time. There were good things too. You know, I got to see a lot of the country and a lot of the different places and meet a lot of interesting people. And I had a really wild growing up. My parents did all kinds of different things, and so there was a lot of different, you know, work ethic. We all did a lot of work. I lived on a farm a lot. My, you know, used to milk the goats. I totally grew up that way.
That's awesome. Why
build castles out of hay bales?
Why 33 different places? Like, why was there constant moving? Was it their military family? Was it they got tired of or bored, or was it for an opportunity?
It was a combo of things. Military wasn't one of them. I know. I think my mom just counted that up as fun one time, but it's something that stuck with me, you know. A lot of it was work opportunity. Some of it was my dad just read about this cool place and we were going to go check it out. I know we came up to the Northwest because I was actually in a choir, and we were on a tour up through the West Coast and into Canada. And somehow part of that trip, I was younger, I was maybe like 8 or 9. We had a flat tire in Gig Harbor. And when we went home, at that point, I lived in Arizona. When we went back down after that trip, we just decided to move to Gig Harbor. That was really cool. It was pretty. So there's a lot of adventure involved. Yeah, some of it was really exciting and cool. Other times, I didn't like it so much.
Yeah, that's a lot of moving.
Yeah. But in the Northwest, I've been up here for quite a bit of time. And I think that there, you know, there was just a lot of things going on. And I don't really know the answers. I was a little kid, so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And how did you end up, you know, in Portland, Oregon?
I actually been on my own since about 16. I left at 15 and went back for a very brief stay. But I moved down to Vancouver actually when I was 17. So I lived up by Seattle for junior high and high school, and I moved down here with some friends, and yeah, it's another crazy adventure.
Well, and you've stayed, right?
I have, yeah. That is one different thing. I know I've mostly stayed in the same place. And I think because I moved so much as a kid, even though I've moved around Vancouver or Portland or the area a lot, I'm a single mom. I raised a daughter on my own. She's a grown up now, but I always made sure she went to the same school, even if we lived in different places, or I tried to create a little bit more stability there, because I think some of that was detrimental to me, even though some of those adventures are good for me now. They, as a kid, they weren't.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And did you make art as a child?
Mm-hmm. Anytime I could. We were pretty poor. Most of my art as a kid was made out of dirt or juniper leaves or like, I used to make my own paint out of the creek bed. So we didn't have like art supplies a whole lot. But I did. I always loved art class in high school and junior high. I took all the art school and drama classes that I could. So I've always loved art. I don't know that I'm really that great at it, but yeah, I've made art supplies out of all kinds of things. I think that was mostly, you know, we made our own supplies when I was little.
Mm-hmm. And you started working at I've Been Framed. It mm-hmm. had a different name prior, right? It was like
Art Supply Center.
Art Supply Center. Was it in 1995, something like that?
Mm-hmm. March and of 95.
So how did you, you know, apply for or fall into that job? And
that's actually a pretty funny story too. I was managing restaurants. I was working, I was hired to turn around poorly performing restaurants, and it was really awesome, but I also had had my fill of that, and I actually had quit my job. I didn't know what I was going to do. I just knew I didn't want to do that, and I was having lunch across the street from what was then Art Supply Center, and I was like, ooh, art supplies, that'd be really cool. I want to go work there, so I didn't have a resume, didn't have anything. I just went over and introduced myself and was like, hey, I want to work here.
And can you tell us about the owner?
Yes. The original founding owner at that point. Yeah. He's really great. I didn't have a whole lot of interaction with him at first. The manager back then, was an old hippie, and I like to joke that the only reason I got hired was because she liked my name. She thought it was really cool. So I worked a lot with her, but Bob was really a great guy. Like, he would always be in his office doing different things, and the more I worked with him, the more I saw different parts of who he is. He always had all these great sales lines, like, prices are born here and raised elsewhere, and you know, if somebody found a flaw on a frame, he would say, oh, we'll save that for the blind lady. There's some things that, like, we were so horrified by that he would say, but everybody always knows, like, his heart and loved him immensely. There were some things that I was like, Bob, you cannot say that. But he was just really great. He loved helping people. He always believed in people starting and having their own businesses. And I can't count how many people he actually, that I saw, help over the years, either put money into it or help them with different things. But he loved running businesses and having businesses and had a bunch of different ones himself. So he was really a great guy, really fun character.
Well, and it sounds like he had quite the vision, because wasn't the building like an oil garage or some sort of auto place? So
yeah, I found some really cool pictures of it. It was an auto garage in the 20s, and that was the only thing there on the corner of 50th Powell and Foster, and it was like that for quite a while. I have these cool old pictures of like Model T's up in the area there, where it's like there's a floor drain where the oil changes were done. And later on, before he bought it, it was an auto supply store. So when there's still a couple things back there that I'm like, oh, spark plugs hung up here or something. So I remember that's actually one of the things I loved about it, because I feel like walking in there was like going back to art class. Or when I was a teenager, I used to want to be a mechanic. So I also had a love for the greasy oil pit, I guess.
Yeah.
But it's a cool building. It's a funky old place that has a lot of history. And
Well, it sounds like, from what I've read, you know, Bob was maybe not the most organized. There's kind of stuff everywhere. But yes, that was also potentially the highlight for a lot of customers.
Yes.
Which it still is, because there's a lot of stuff that you have, but this sort of like exploration of finding something great.
Yes. I totally remember when me and a few other, I started working there. I think Bob had only had employees for maybe 3 or 4 years when I started working there. But I will never forget, I had quite a few customers upset at us for organizing things. Like, all the deals were gone. There was nothing else left to find. We got organized and everything's really expensive. I was like, no, I swear, it's just organized. Like,
yeah.
See, you can find it. So, yeah, there's some really funny stories of him. And I can only imagine what his other stores previous to that location were. I've heard some fun stories, though.
Yeah. Well, and you still, you know, you still use stickers for prices.
Mm-hmm.
You don't really have like a giant computer system.
Nope.
You know, and you also bundle art gifts. So it sounds like, yes, it is a little bit more organized, but there still is that kind of community feel, find treasures.
Yes. Definitely lots of old school flavor there still. Yes.
Yeah.
Sometimes I wish I had a computer inventory system, because it's all mostly in my brain. But yeah, there's a lot of old, we hand price things, we hand make things, we hand do a lot of things there. And I love that charm. You know, I've looked at adding different systems that would computerize some of that. And I mean, I can't really imagine the undertaking that would be to get everything in there, because we have a lot of weird stuff. But I also kind of like the charm of the old school way. You know, I've brought us into the current century in some ways, but
yeah. And supply wise, do you think you have different things in other art stores?
Yes. There's a lot of ways that we have the same things, but we buy, sell, trade. So we get used things, and a lot of those are cool vintage things and, or like hard to find things that aren't made anymore. So there's a lot of, you know, unique random treasures. Sometimes there's really weird things there. I've been working there for 25 years, and I swear every single day I can go there and find something weird I've never seen where I'm like, where did this come from? Like, yeah, it's kind of wacky, but we do have a lot of the normal supplies that other stores do have. Sometimes we have the same kind of deals on them and other times we have crazy deals on them, but I feel like we have a good mix of, I like to say new, used, and rare art supplies. Hmm.
And, you know, we're in a pandemic. Everyone knows that. Yeah. Shut up. You know, I was really impressed by, you know, most overused word, pivot. You pivoted. You did curbside delivery or curbside pickups. Mm-hmm. Can you talk about that? Like, the pandemic happens. You probably had, like, an oh shit moment.
Or a few,
how did you sort of come to terms with it and say, okay, well, this is what we're going to do?
Sure. We ended up closing a week before Multnomah County required it. I think we got to the point that, you know, it went from 25 people in one place to 10. And even during that week, some of my employees were like, I think there's 20 people in the store right now, you know, not really knowing what's going on or what's happening. And when the governor brought it down to 10, I was like, I have 8 people scheduled tomorrow. Like, I think we just need to cut this off. We need to close up. We need to regroup, let everybody quarantine. So I sent all my employees home and let them quarantine for 2 weeks. And I didn't really know or plan if I was going to go back, but of course, I was there the next day. I got to put the sign up. I got to change the phone message. And I basically quarantined myself there. And I think I had a lot of oh shit moments. I had a lot of what in the world are we going to do? I had a lot of wandering the store just with my brain blown of like, we're an art store. I encourage touching on a daily basis, like touch it, try it, open it up. You know, in my store, you can always open things up or try it. We appreciate you asking, but I'm wandering around being like, how am I even supposed to, like, I will never be in an art store where you can't touch things or you can't do things. So I was really, I don't know, just mind blown. And I think it took me probably about 2 or 3 days to really just kind of be in horror too at the reaction of a lot of other places. I was very sad and disappointed to see so many companies just lay off their entire staff or lay off half the staff or just freak out and do a bunch of stuff, which understandably it was a freak out time. There's absolutely no judgment. But on my end, what happened with me was I just knew right away, I don't want to do that for my people. I want to keep my people. I don't want anybody to have to face unemployment. So we had already sent them home to quarantine for 2 weeks. It was all paid. We were just going to figure out what we were going to do one step at a time. And so I basically took that as I have 2 weeks to figure out like how we're going to function in a closed down society where you have an art store that you can't touch anything. So I spent a lot of time trying different things and basically created a system for pickup and delivery and slowly started bringing back my staff the more I built some of that. But at that point, too, there was a lot of unknowns and we weren't requiring that of people. I do have several employees who are higher risk and I wasn't even going to think about asking them to come back until I knew that I had created like a good safe space for that. And you know, it's been one crazy thing after another and a wild adventure. I still don't know if I know what I'm doing, but essentially I've created one system after another to try to keep functioning. And my main goal this whole time has just been to keep our staff, to keep trying to find new ways to serve our community, to get art supplies to people who are stuck at home and need it, or who have COVID and need, you know, things to take their mind off of that. And so I don't know if that totally answers your question, but I...
Yeah, absolutely.
It's been a wild ride of trying to figure things out, but my staff and everybody keeping their jobs has been my number one, of course, in keeping the community and everybody safe. So it's kind of challenging to figure in this time right now.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, we talk about groceries, of course, our priority, and hand sanitizer and stuff like that. But, you know, and everybody was baking bread.
Yeah.
But, you know, art is what keeps people alive and keeps people going, allows people to express themselves, especially people who had a quarantine or are quarantining alone, potentially, and this is their pastime.
Yes. I've had a lot of people who used to paint years ago, but have been so busy working that they don't have time and they can start painting again. Or I have people who lost their job and only have a few dollars but want to do this kind of a project or something like that. And I really love the challenge of helping people, serving people always. That's kind of at the forefront of who I am and what we have always been for as a business. So in hard times, I always feel like that is just an extra time to shine for others and go that extra step. You know, you lost your job, you're looking to do something for $2 and this is what you want to do. Like, I will make this happen, you know. There's other times where I almost like kind of break down just thinking about all of the ways that people have followed steps to even order from me. These wild systems I've created, like somebody went through all the hassle of figuring that out to order, you know, whatever it is, a couple pencils or $40 in paint or $2 of erasers, you know, like every single sale, it doesn't matter. Like it's still, I just feel the love, you know? It's an interesting time where I feel like we're not only giving and helping people, but people are also doing that for us. And that's really humbling and really awesome too.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and when you buy from, you know, a corporate entity, you know, Staples, Office Depot, whatever it may be.
Yeah.
Or a large art supply store, Michael's, for example. You know, you will probably get good customer service, but you don't get that sort of story. You don't get the community feel.
Yeah.
You potentially don't get to meet the people who are running the store day and night.
Yeah.
So I think that a lot of people, especially in 2020, they can appreciate that. They, you know, the authenticity of a business and what it stands for. And so they're happy to go through all those processes because...
Yeah.
It is about the art supplies, but it's also about this is a community.
Yeah.
You know, if I buy here, I'm helping you and you're helping me and we're together creating art and creating community together.
Yes. Yes. I absolutely agree. I love that about Portland. I feel like there's Portland gets that more than a lot of places, I think. And, we do help each other. You know, we get through that. We've always prided ourselves in being, you know, we're artists working for other artists. You know, we take our job seriously. You totally do get customer service at Michael's, but it's not really the same. Because we take it, I think, like even steps farther where it's like, even if you're asking me, like, what's the right glue for this project or I need glue, I'm not just going to like point you to the glue. I'm going to say like, well, what are you gluing together? What are you doing? Mm-hmm. You know, so we take like the education part of it just as seriously as the rest and offering those kinds of services for people at home doing projects during pandemic is just as fun. But sometimes it's just being there for people too and listening to them. But yeah, I feel like finding new creative ways to serve the community during the pandemic has been, of course, extremely challenging, but also I think wild and fun as well. It's like, you know, when you break yourself out of a certain mindset or box that you're in, and it's just insane. There's a lot of things that are tough and difficult about that, but I also am one of those that I always love a good challenge, and you know, I want to find, you know, how can we help you where you're at right now? Mm-hmm. What do you need? Do you need just a pencil, or do you need to learn how to acrylic paint, you know? So I love our community and our customers, and we definitely feel a lot of the support right now.
Yeah. And I know, you know, not just in pandemic times, but in other times you do other community support. So mm-hmm. you've donated supplies to summer camps and things like that. Mm-hmm. Can you talk a little bit about that? Like,
sure.
Why? I mean, I know it might sound like a crazy question, but you know, why as a business, you know, why make donations like that, or why try to find outside organizations that you care about and take a stance on things like social justice? Like, what is your viewpoint on how a business can effectively give back to the community?
I feel like that's really important, and there's a lot of different ways. I feel like in some ways you can look at that as a business as being really overwhelming. Like, oh, I don't have a whole lot. I can't do this, or I can do this. And I think that's not really the way that we have to look at it. Like, what can we do? You know, like, I have these 50,000 brushes I bought. Well, I can totally donate to this mural, you know, or I have this or that. And I feel like looking at what you have makes that really easy. And sometimes it's not just money. Of course, the pandemic has made it difficult where it's not finances as much, but we have extra brushes or extra pencils, and donations have been a little bit harder during the pandemic. But you know, as a whole, in general, I feel like that's so much of what we're called to do, because we are part of the community. And I often feel like I'm a conduit of things more than anything else, especially when we buy, sell, trade, and we get these estate lots, or I honor the wishes of artists all the time, whether it's like, you know, they're retiring or they have to move into a assisted living home, or the artist has passed away and the family is working with me. There's a lot of times where we've learned over the years where it's like taking and dealing with that stuff. There's often like, well, I'm not going to use this, but I'm going to be able to sell this. And so I'm just spent so much time finding other sources and places for that. So I do a lot of that. We also know how much of a budget teachers have lately, especially for art supplies. That's one drastic difference I've seen over the 25 years I've been here. And there's some teachers that I've known for years and years, and they have a smaller and smaller and smaller budget every year, where I feel like instead of spending a lot of money on advertising or things like that to promote us, we often try to instead channel that money into helping others. And, you know, so I work a lot with teachers and schools or grassroots organizations where it's like, hey, we're doing this downtown and we need this, you know, to set up our table. And I'm like, okay, what kind of a budget do you have? And what is it that you need? And I like to creatively work with making your needs match your budget, which is challenging sometimes, but I think being involved in the community and part of that is extremely important, especially in days like today, you know, with a lot of the things going on in the world. I feel like art is incredibly important, you know, if not more so than I've ever known in my whole life. So I think it's, you know, important we get out there and make art and be heard and speak up and yeah.
Well, I also know you have a really good sense of humor. I you know, we see on Instagram you putting dolls, you know, flying in the air, and
yes
dinosaurs in different places and all things like that. Do you want to talk a little bit about that? Like, how do you use humor to get through your day? And
sure. I think without humor, well, I don't know, the world would be a lot darker in my mind. I feel like, you know, you have to not make fun of the situation or make light of it, but I think find hope and light in dark places. And the funny thing about Instagram and stuff like that is I've never really done the Instagram for us until the pandemic. All my staff are really amazing and they do all kinds of cool stuff on there. But during the pandemic, when I was in there by myself, quarantining, I got even extra silly because I'm like, at first, I think it all started where I was like, oh, I don't know what to do. There's no customers. We can't sell anything. But I don't want, you know, like, hey, people, we're still here, you know, like, so I think it started by I was always wearing the gloves every day. So I just started matching paint colors to my gloves or art supplies to my gloves. And that, you know, everybody really loves that. But I'm like trying to make fun of the situation, but also like express that, like, we're taking it seriously and we care about this. But hey, what color blue are these gloves? You know, are they this color or that? And so some of that was really silly. But if you know us and have been into our store, we're silly every day. There's all kinds of hidden things there, signs that we make and goofy, you know. One time I had everybody label all the Made in Oregon products in the store with little Dr. Seuss Loraxes. We had like a Made in Oregon tag that we put everywhere. One time we labeled everything that was gluten-free in the store. It was somewhat of a joke, but, you know, some of that stuff is just classic us. And I think when I took over the Instagram, I think that was my heart, is just like, you know, we're all in this dark, crazy time. We need to have some hope. You know, hope is never closed. Hope is going to get us through this, you know. And
I think you had a sign up that said that too, right?
Mm-hmm. I that's one of my mottos that I kind of latched onto after we had to close. And the Instagram and some of that fun stuff, I feel like was, you know, it was giving me hope and it was fun to hear from everybody and have people enjoy that humor. And we're very silly. I think that there's a fine line in today's world, especially, of where that lies and how you do that and how you don't. So I feel like that's actually been one of my challenges, is giving respect and space and love to amplifying black voices and black lives and black businesses and everything that's going on in our world. So there's sometimes where I'll have a bunch of stuff like that, but then I'll also be like, no, I'm just gonna, you know, chill out over here and give space to, you know, the other things that are super important going on. And my little mannequin guy flying through the store and art supplies feels really ridiculous in the light of some things. But I also feel like humor is important, you know. Laughter is medicine. And I think that at the end of the day, we have to find the positive things in the trying times, or at least that's how I am, because it makes it easier.
Yeah. I think I read somewhere that you have like a contest for your staff. I don't know if you still do this, where they get to design a section of the store.
Oh yeah, that was into a theme. Super fun. Yeah, that was super fun. I did that a few years ago, and I actually planned it out where I had like 2 or 3 years of it laid out. And then I can't remember what happened. I think we had a couple people leave the store, and then we didn't have enough people to do it. But I still have the plans for that, and I still want to do that. It was really awesome because it was kind of an educational thing of helping my staff learn the different things in each section that they needed to. But it also was like a contest of, okay, you know, so-and-so gets this section and so-and-so has brushes. So-and-so has, we split up the store in sections of stuff. And I had different rules that you had to follow. It was, you know, don't tell my employees, but I'm sure they already know this. It was like secretly my manager way of like saying, we really need to dial these places in, and we really need to like learn more about this product, or we need to fix this or label this. But I kind of just made it like a fun game. And it was really cool because we kind of needed to take the time and focus to overhaul those sections. But the contest just made it more fun. So it went for like 3 months, and they had to do like before and after pictures. And they had to answer a series of questions. And then we basically all voted for who did the best before and after. And what problems you solved, like redoing the watercolor section or redoing the brush section. Like, what were the problems with customers and stuff like that that needed addressed, and how did they address that? So we voted on a winner after 3 months. And then I was trying to remember what the prizes were. They were really cool. One of them was a $75 to a local business. That was one of them. One of them was like store credit of a certain amount. And oh, and then they got like 1 or 2 days off paid or something. So it was fun. I like, I feel like I've always been the kind of manager to do weird, wacky, fun, goofy things. And I think if anything, I'll get something rolling and it goes really good. Like, that was super fun. And then something kind of knocks it off kilter, and I still have those plans. It's like, I'll take them out, but I don't get back to it for a while. And I hope to do more of that sometime soon. Yeah. I also had plans for some kind of a superhero takeover of the store. I can't remember the details too.
That sounds great.
I dream up really weird things sometimes. But it's fun. I feel like work needs to be fun. We all work really, really hard. There's a lot of crazy things when, you know, we have like all kinds of random things that show up or do. There's a lot of work. We work hard. So you have to have fun. When you work, I think it's really, really important.
And how do you hire, you know? it's, first of all, I mean, it sounds like a fun environment, but it also sounds like whoever you hire, they have to not only care about art supplies, but care about the community and have values that align.
Mm-hmm.
So when you're hiring someone, you know, is it pretty standard, like how you'd hire someone else at another place of business? Or do you do anything kind of quirky for hiring as well? What does that look like?
That's a good idea. I'm going to write that down. I haven't done anything quirky for hiring, but I'm going to have to think about that. For the most part, it's similar to a lot of others. It's definitely not like when I hired at the restaurant where that's kind of boring and lame. I feel like I don't have positions very much. Like, it's only maybe once every couple of years that something will come up, because my people tend to stay with us. So it's not something that I do all the time or too much. But when I do, I feel like I try to be mindful of trying to ask questions and get a feel for, you know, how somebody is. And I also... my advice to anybody looking for a job, I feel like that side of the table is less stressful than my side of the table, I just have to say. So I usually try to make it light and easy and tell somebody that, like, you know, I've been on both sides of this table and I'd prefer to be on your side, you know. Try to make it so that people are themselves and feel okay, because I think that nervous interviews don't really portray any of us very well. I think that's something just all across the board in hiring, it's hard to see. So I'm always trying to figure out, like, how do you dial in this in a interview question? Like, that's not an easy thing to do. But I think usually if you just make somebody comfortable enough where they're being themselves and saying, you know, different things, then that makes it easier. But I always feel like there's so many cool people that I want to hire that want to work there that I don't have enough jobs for them yet, but maybe someday.
Yeah.
I'll just keep making more work.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, we didn't really touch upon it too much. I actually wanted to save it for a later interview, but you're now the owner of I've Been Framed.
Yes.
Can we talk about that?
Sure.
So, first of all, congratulations.
Thank you.
Did you think in 1995 that you would ever become the owner?
No. Not in my wildest dreams. I've I've been told that, or that has almost happened many different times over the last 20 years. And I think about 10 or 12 years ago, maybe even 15, I was like, I'll believe it when I see it. So, but when I first started, no, would have never thought that.
And how did that come to play?
That was kind of a long journey, but initially, the founding father was going to sell it to me, after a couple different things when he was going to retire. None of his kids were interested in the business at the time, and he was going to sell it to me when he retired. Shortly before that, one of his kids did become interested in the business and started being involved there, and he ended up buying it, which at the time, I mean, to be honest, I was a little upset, but I also understood. I had a kid, and I think I also promised not to ever do that to somebody, but I get, like, when you build something and you spend your whole life doing that, you want to share that with your kids, and to have somebody be interested in that after not being interested in that, I did have a love and respect for that. So I was like, okay, well, I'll just keep waiting my turn. And so I worked for the Sun for the last 14 or 15 years.
Mark, right?
Yeah, Mark. There were many times along the way that we talked about that. I do know he was going to honor his father's wishes in selling me the business. There were a lot of different times that we saw eye to eye on things, and sometimes we did, you know, we're not sure. We were on different pages as far as how things are run or differently done. And there was one time that I thought maybe he wasn't going to sell me the business, so I started my own business on the side, thinking that was, you know, I was kind of in a rebellious moment at that point. I was like, fine, you know, I've been working here a really long time, and if I'm not going to get to own this, I'm going to go start my own thing. But of course, that just meant I was running two businesses instead of one.
And what was that business?
It's called Turntable Books. I was making old record album covers from record stores that the vinyl has been trashed or lost, or I worked mostly with local record stores, but I got a lot of clients even down in California that would send me like empty covers, and I trim the covers and turn them into blank sketchbooks and notebooks. And at the time when I started that business, it was, like I said, I was kind of just being rebellious a little bit, I think, of like, fine, I'm gonna make my own business. I didn't really think that it would be that good of an idea. I think I was just like, I'm going to go set up on last Thursday and sell some sketchbooks, you know. It turned into a pretty good idea, and I had a lot of wholesale customers, and it's really grown a lot. That business is over 10 years old now, and that was really exciting. But the last couple years, I know I've talked with Mark many times, and his plan was to sell to me when he retired. So it's kind of been, you know, the last 3 or 4 years, I'm like, this business, I love them both. And so that's been difficult, but it's good too.
And did he say to you, you know, I'm ready to sell, or what? Yeah, was kind of the this is what I'm thinking, Prairie, are you down for this?
That's been kind of ongoing for maybe 5 years. It's like, I think, you know, in the next year or two, I'm going to retire and I'll sell it to you. And I'm like, okay. And then that year or two goes by and there's something that comes up. And there's sometimes that was frustrating. But also, I have such a love for Bob and the business that he started. And I also have a love and respect for Mark and where he's at in life. And I think in my thoughts, just, you know, if that was me on the edge of retirement, that's, you know, that's what you're going to do with the rest of your life. So I'm, when I'm to that point, whoever I sell the business to, I hope gives me the time and space to actually figure out exactly when I want to do that. So I did have a lot of respect and love for that, even though sometimes I'm like, okay, you know, I think about four or five years ago, I just got to be all, okay, cool. Yeah, that sounds good. You know, sure. Not really counting on that as much as I did years ago, because I just got to that place that I do what I do and I love running the business. And if I ever owned it someday, that'd be really cool. But I didn't really know if that would actually happen.
Yeah. Well, and you've been the manager for quite some time. So in a way, it was almost as if you did own it.
Yes. I've done a lot of the same. I mean, now that I'm the owner, my job really hasn't changed a whole lot. I just write a couple more checks. but I did most all of the running of it for the son. You know, I think in a lot of ways, he had never done anything like that. So I basically essentially taught him how to even be part of the business or own it. So yeah, I've done a lot of that stuff and managed it for 25 years. So.
And you became the owner right before the pandemic, right?
In the middle of it.
In the middle of it, okay.
We agreed that that was going to happen in July of this year. We agreed on that last year and started the whole process of that. And then, yeah, it's that was one of the other things I thought of those first few days quarantining myself in the store. Was
great time to buy a business.
After waiting 20 years for my dreams to happen, the 1 year that they come true, the pandemic, the apocalypse happens, all of this stuff, is I was like, wow, like what are the odds? But yeah, so I took over in July, so it was in the very middle of the pandemic. It's been good times.
And I noticed, you know, in addition to being more active on Instagram, you know, you have a blog. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, sure. That was we used to have a blog years ago, and it never really it was all more embarrassing to say than not. We weren't able to keep up with it, and that was one of the things in the pandemic of me just trying to figure out different ways of what we can do, how we can do things, and offering employees ways to work, whether that's, you know, at home, in the store, different things. And I have an employee that has some experience in some of that, and she's done a, you know, great job of giving different projects and artist articles and, you know, kind of giving people at home hope and projects to do and things. And then we started a series of spotlighting Oregon artists on there a couple months ago, and that's been really fun. So yeah, we're still kind of developing and figuring out what that looks like or not, because our email newsletter we used to only kind of send out once a month, and it had a lot of shop news and products and goofy stories from the store. That always has to be the case. We always have to have goofy silliness, coupons and stuff like that. And I think the blog is very different from what we've normally done. So we're still kind of in the process of defining that and figuring out, you know, what does that look like, or what do people want to hear about right now? Do you want to learn how to draw something, or do you want to learn about somebody else, or have a project to keep your mind off of the world collapsing around us, or like, you know, so just trying to keep things light, educational, and give people things to do and things to focus on and hope in the midst of darkness out there.
Well, and I like the, you know, the information on art projects and things like that, but I really like the idea of spotlighting Oregon artists.
Yeah.
Because there are artists we just don't know about, right? Or maybe we see their work, but we don't really know the story behind them and who they are. And so I think that's a really beautiful thing.
Yeah, it's really fun. Yeah, we're still taking submissions. So if anybody wants to apply, it's really fun to spotlight that. And one of the funny, you know how like you can read people unsubscribing and you can read their reasons. I actually had somebody unsubscribe from our list because we discriminate against any artist that's not in Oregon. And I was like, what?
Yeah.
We're just running a series on highlighting Oregon artists, but
well, and even Oregon is you know, you're covering the state when your store is in Portland.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Well, we have customers from all over, and it's, I think it's one of those things where you're like, okay, I certainly don't want people to think that we're discriminating against that. I think we're just supporting our community, mm-hmm. you know, looking for those different things. And yeah, so the blog, we're still working on kind of defining what that looks like and what's not. So yeah. I'm glad you're enjoying those.
Yeah, absolutely. And you raised a good point. Your store is kind of a place that people know about and visit from all over.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think is really cool. So it's kind of, you know, another staple. There's Voodoo Donuts, and then there's Ivan Frant.
That's true. Yeah, I'm always amazed at how far certain customers come to see us. I have customers that drive down from Canada, that come out from the coast, or drive over from Idaho or Montana even. And I'm like, oh my gosh, you know. When people move away, there's a lot of times where they'll be like, I miss you guys. And I'm like, I'm right next to the post office. Just let me know what you need, you know?
Yeah.
So I think just being, you know, Bob started in 1955. So that's 65 years of a lot of different, you know, things people can't find otherwise. And I actually have people find me from all over the nation looking for the buy sell trade or estates, help with artist estates and stuff, because that's a really unique thing that nobody else really in the country does. So it's something that is useful. Even, you know, I'll have somebody call me up like, I'm in Michigan and my mom has all these art supplies I need to get rid of, and I'm like, I really wish I could help you, but that's too many states away from me. But it's nice that everybody makes the trip to come see us, and I miss everybody in the store, but we'll get back there sometime soon.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, do you feel any different being the owner?
You know, everybody keeps asking me that, and I'm like, am I supposed to? No. I think I haven't really had enough time for it to be real or sink in or feel that way. I've just been so busy trying to reinvent the business to overcome a pandemic that it's still sinking in. There's sometimes though that I'm like, oh yeah, we can just do this because I say so. And that's really cool, but for the most part I feel like it's kind of just business as usual, and not a lot of things mm-hmm. are going to change. You know, a lot of it is the same kind of a thing as we always have. But yeah, I can do a little bit more of the different things that I would personally like to choose and go for. Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm excited about it.
Oh, good. Thanks.
So we're almost done with the podcast.
Okay.
We have the last part is five questions.
Okay.
That I ask every podcast guest. So the first question is, if this wasn't your focus right now, what would be your passion project?
You know, I heard you ask that on other ones I've listened to, and I was like, ooh, that's a good one. That one's pretty easy for me to answer. It sounds like crazy. I didn't even know this was a job until a few years ago, but it's something I always end up doing, and that's, I think I would be like a death doula. I'd help people at the end of life, either something like that or in natural medicine. I think that both of those are things that I either end up always helping people with, and I have a love and passion for, you know, being there for grief and different things like that. And natural medicine too. I love helping people. So that's a lot of help too.
Well, that just speaks volumes about who you are, because, you know, you could have said rock star.
Yeah.
But rock stars, rock stars come in different shapes and sizes, right?
Yes.
Okay, so what is something in your life other than your given or chosen family that you know will always bring you joy?
I think just being there for people, giving to others, doing things, whatever that means that I can. And art supplies and paints and, like, you know. Mostly I really enjoy helping people, and whether that's my given family or not, people easily become my given family is basically how I am.
What are you currently binge watching or reading right now?
Gosh, I wish I was any of that, but I haven't really been. I have a stack of books I keep wanting to read. I just have been so focused on reinventing the business. I'm like gonna get to those soon. And I haven't really been watching a whole lot of stuff. I keep wanting to. I have another list of those things that I want to watch. So if you have suggestions. Music, I have mostly just been listening to, like, the jazz station driving into work or something. Other than that, I listen to what my employees put on at work. But it sounds really crazy. I've just been, you know, eat, sleep, breathing, reinventing the business. So it's kind of boring answer.
No. When the world gets back on track and you're able to travel, where would you want to travel first?
Well, I've never been anywhere outside of the... Well, I've been to, like, Canada and Mexico, but I haven't been, like, anywhere farther than that. So I think I'd really love to go to Ireland or Norway. Or the Czech Republic.
And what about if you were asked to give a TED Talk? What would you want to share? What would your talk be about?
I've been thinking about that a lot because, A, don't think I would ever give a TED Talk, but I was like, that was a really hard one to answer. After thinking about it, I think servant leadership. It sounds, when I first heard that term a couple years ago in an article, I didn't even know that was a thing, but it was something that was eye-opening to me because that's something that I've always done. It's something that I believe in. And I look at, not that my employees work for me, but that I work to serve them. And it's kind of a backwards, weird thing. But I remember a couple years ago coming across an article on it. And I was super excited because these are all the things I used to get in trouble for. And now it's like some style of leadership that you should try out, you know? So... I'd have to do some more research on what actually is said about it out there, but that's something that's really dear to my heart, and I feel like I could probably talk a lot on that.
Okay, well, I have to ask you about your Bob Ross shirt. For the listeners, Prairie's wearing a Bob Ross shirt. What does it say?
Ever make it mistakes in life? Let's make them birds. Yeah, they're birds now. And, you know, I've always wondered, so, like, see this corner of the shirt? It's, like, half off. And I was like, is that, like, a... Of course, it's, like, the screen printer in me. I'm like, is that, like, the screen print was bad? Or was that a purpose mistake that it's, like, part of the shirt?
That's part of Bob Ross.
Yeah.
Putting little trees over there.
Yeah, my daughter got it for me.
It's a great shirt. Last part, not really a question, but kind of a question... Who are some of your favorite local organizations that are doing good things? So if you want to give some shout outs.
I would definitely shout out to MISO, Micro Enterprise Services of Oregon. They're a really awesome organization. Help with people wanting to start a business or maintain a business. They're kind of a lot of different education and grants and loans and building credit or where do you start to do your own business. They're a really awesome organization that's kind of built out of grassroots part of Black United Oregon Fund. And Grief Rights is also another cool local organization. I haven't had a chance to tune into as much as what they're doing since the pandemic, but I do know that they just started doing some readings on Zoom. But I really connect with what their vision is as far as, like, our culture not being able to give space or a place to talk about or express grief. And I think that's a really important thing. And then my other one, because it's almost Veterans Day, would be Do Good Multnomah and how they help find good places for homeless veterans and serve veterans.
Cool.
Yeah.
Well, I really appreciate you being here and doing this podcast.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
I'm excited to see your store continue to grow and thrive.
Oh, thanks. I'm excited to get through this time, but yeah.
You'll do it.
Yes. Well, thanks so much.
Yeah, thank you.
We would like to thank Prairie Clark for being on this episode of the podcast. To find out more about I've Been Framed, the family-owned Funky Fine Arts store in Portland, visit iveBeenFramedPDX.com. Again, we want to extend a sincere thank you to X-Ray FM for the 2020 X-Ray Award. Check out all the good work they're doing at 91.1 FM, 107.1 FM, and online at xray.fm. And thank you for checking out this episode of All of Your Business. You can visit us at allofyourbusinesspodcast.com for previous episodes, sponsors, and much more. Be sure to subscribe to the podcast and share with your friends. This episode was recorded at JJT Studios and edited at Track 11 Music.